This is 90.9 FM WDCB, The Real Deal, with Orbert Davis, doing what we do every Friday night. It's become a habit for me, and I hope it is for you too. And if it's not yet, after this hour, it will be. Because every once in a while, as you know, we bring in a special guest host to join in the process of talking about this music and education and saving the world through jazz. So I am so excited that right now I have Bria Schoenberg. Did I say your name right?
You did, actually. Right. One of the rare few. Well, Schoenberg, sure.
Well, my name's Orbert. And I get Orbit. I get corrections to be Robert. So, you know, I have to be very careful with names. Plus, having a radio show, I think 90% of the time I mess up names. So
you nailed it. There you
Thank
go.
You. Thank you. And you are an amazing trumpet player. I've played your music many times. So let's start by telling us who you are.
Well, hello, everybody. yes, my name is Bria. I grew up in a somewhat rural town in British Columbia, Canada. I'm a product of great public school band programs as far as playing trumpet. I started on piano. I have a wonderful family that are not professional musicians, but just were adamant about us picking up different skill sets. So I started on piano, played trumpet, and fell in love with jazz through the school programs. My hometown actually had a festival that focused on classic jazz, which is not too common. So the music of Louis Armstrong, Jelly Roll Morton, Lil Hardin, Sidney Bechet, those are the foundations of what I started to learn about. And
in elementary school?
By that time it was more middle school, high school. But that is basically the foundation. My first hero is Louis Armstrong. I feel so fortunate that my high school teachers gave me music like Potato Head Blues and West End Blues to really get into it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't privately trained. That just wasn't something that happened in our community at that time. But I feel like I learned a lot, and there was a lot of heart, and there was a lot of support there for making musical magic together that allowed me to get inspired to continue it through post-secondary.
Wow. And that's really what it takes. I mean, as an educator, I always say, well, we have so many stories of that happening. Why don't we use that as an antidote? Why don't we use that as the model for change rather than advocacy, you know?
But, you know, a good teacher, you know, or just reaching out one-on-one, putting the recordings under the ears into the heart of students, if they hear it and they get a chance to play it, I'm sure they'll love
it. Exactly. And then you get to model it, too. I mean, and what greater example than Louis Armstrong and the example you mentioned?
You know, he was an incredible trumpet player, obviously a vocalist, interpreter of song, and just an incredible human being.
Exactly.
That's what I really look up to.
Exactly. And, you know, you can look at pictures of Louis and you can't help but to be transpired by his personality.
Absolutely.
Just the smile alone.
Yeah, you know? He's a real ambassador of the music. And in the last few years since moving to New York City, I've been working a lot with the Louis Armstrong House Museum. It's in Queens where he lived, and they're developing educational programs for their archives. Excellent. I mean, I can't explain the chills. I even just get thinking about it. The chills you get playing in the space where he was. It's so inspiring.
And where he lived.
Where he lived, yeah. Right. Him and his wife, Lucille, lived there for many years.
Awesome. I can tell by your smile that that means so much. And so when you came to New York, this was after college or?
Yes. So I made my big move to Vancouver and went to Capilano University. That was a big move for me at the time. And got my degree in jazz trumpet performance and started working. I was managing, leading a couple bands around that time.
Sure.
I took my love and my experience in classic jazz into managing and tailoring groups that mainly focused on the music of like 1900 to 1930s.
Sure.
Classic American jazz. Who would have thought? Some girl from Canada. That being said, I loved it. But after a while, I just realized, look, I'm watching the movie, but I haven't read the book. I need to go visit New Orleans.
Nice.
You know, you start to really question, what is this? Not how did I get into it, but how did it get to me? And I need to know much more. And, that has just opened up a whole wormhole of.
But you wouldn't necessarily call yourself a traditionalist, would you, in your style of playing?
No, I do not. I believe that, you know, good music will continue if you don't suffocate it in a way. There's an extremely important part of education that has to come from emulating greats, and I do think that recreating things is an important part of the education. I've got a version of Cornet Chop Suey, an original arrangement one of Louis's tunes that.
Right, right.
Yeah, I reharmonized. But that's because I've played the original version enough times to know at least.
And you've recorded that? I don't know if I know that one.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. All right. So let's start by playing an example of one of your most favorite recordings that you recorded. Which one would that be?
Oh, wow. Well, I just released a new album called Nothing Never Happens.
Okay.
And one of the tracks on there, we'll start here, which will give you an idea of it. One of the tracks is called So Is the Day. And this is actually a song that I wrote quite a while ago, but I continue to play it because it morphs along with me. So there's a version of it from 2012 you might know, but I recently recorded it, and it's just got a different depth to it and dramatic pull to it. It's simple in a lot of ways, but deep. And I'll stop talking about it because I want the learner to have their own experience. But it's called So Is the Day.
All right. We'll talk about it after we hear it.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Bria.
But I can't have you. So is the day that I write this song.
Wow, that was amazing, Bria. Man, wow. So there's a lot to talk about. Oh, let me talk to our audience first. Sometimes when I have this sitting in, I totally forget that we're on the radio. Wow. This is The Real Deal with Orbert Davis on 90.9 FM WDCB. And I am having amazing fun with Bria Schoenberg and talking trumpet. Oh, my goodness. Bria, my listeners know sometimes I'm very selfish. Now, I'll give a whole set of trumpet players, and I have to come back the next hour and say, I'm sorry, that was for me. Here's a saxophone hour. But this is all about trumpet. So excellent. Tell us a little bit more about Nothing Never Happens, what we just heard.
The song that you just heard is called So Is the Day, and it's okay. It's an original composition. It's very dirge-like. I was largely influenced by the music that came out of New Orleans, the southern U.S., and that real feeling of playing from your gut. Mm-hmm. There's some growly trumpet on there. I love playing with plunger.
Yeah, I noticed
and,
that.
And the song is an interesting vehicle because it's intimate, but it builds to a big peak at the end. It gives me mm-hmm. a chance to really work through whatever it is that I'm kind of dealing with at the time and get it out.
Yeah.
I think, which is why, the arts are so important, is to be able to, process things. And these days, you got to get it out because
exactly.
so much is being pushed into our heads these days.
Yeah, and you're understanding that from a Canadian perspective.
Yeah, well, I just got my green card. So
You're American
I'm
now.
Committed. I'm committed. I love many, many things about this country. And again, I'm obsessed with its music.
Yeah.
So,
I love that word, obsessed. So tell me about when you growl, do you actually do a real growl or?
Yeah.
Wow.
What that means for our listeners who aren't necessarily trumpet players is basically just going deep inside your gut, finding the fire and going into the trumpet itself.
Yeah. I cheat.
Well, I can't. You do flutter tongue?
I flutter tongue. I do a very, but I kind of twist my tongue a bit.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of it's creating a tunnel.
Yeah.
And then really fast.
Yeah.
It's there. And I've done it for 30 some years.
Well, I do both. It depends on which effect you want to have.
True.
At the end of the song, sometimes I'll put out a fiery, machine gun of notes.
Yeah.
But having those in your toolbox for effect.
That's cool. But as a teacher, I would always tell students to keep your air.
Yeah.
Canal open as possible. And,
oh, it's not good for you. But I usually play that song at the end of the set because it takes a lot out of me and it's hard to.
I can imagine. But it's so emotional.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Well, wow. So you're in New York City.
Yes, moved 2010. So my 10th year, almost not quite a New Yorker.
Okay. So what is life like for you then?
I moved to New York City because I wanted to get uncomfortable and be challenged. And I don't think I've been comfortable for 10 years, which is what that's if you want to learn, you have to continue to put yourself in these situations.
Yeah,
I love it. I there is never ending inspiration with music, but also food and culture and people.
Yeah.
And the first time I visited there was 2006. I went to go to the IAJE conference at that time.
Yeah.
And right away, just the rhythm of the city, I totally sunk into it. I loved walking through the streets and the way that just everybody would crisscross with each other so much.
Yeah, and almost knock each other over, but not quite. But
yeah. And I know that these conferences are special things, but one of those nights I remember seeing one of the concerts. It was the John Faddis Orchestra on one side of the stage, the Count Basie orchestra on the other side of the stage, and they started bringing up NEA jazz masters, Freddie Hubbard, Bob Brookmeyer, Nancy Wilson, and I just started crying. I just blew into this melting ball of tears because it blew my mind so much.
Yeah.
And that just lit a fire in me that said, I have to come here at some point.
Well, and we just met at a conference.
Yeah,
Now the Jazz Education Network. And that is the most amazing thing, I think, that I hope students are picking up the fact that jazz musicians are real people.
Absolutely.
And so when we met, you were standing next to John Faddis. And of course, John, when he sees me, he gives me a hard time and says,
oh, yeah, he loves that. And you love him for it, but you got to, if you can, I think, give it back to him just a little bit, then he'll respect you.
Well, my secret
old
is
school.
My secret, and John, I hope you're listening, I just rub his belly. Hey, John.
Yeah.
But now we were talking the other day with our team, and just John is now a master. You know, he is one of the masters now. And you look around and you see certain musicians that have their, he's like the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
You know, now John's in that position. And I think that's totally amazing because he's always been that way.
It's really important. And as far as keeping the music going, it's one thing to, you know, remember everybody that came before, but let's celebrate the legends that are with us now and link us to the past.
Exactly.
And John is 100% one of those people.
Yeah.
He's really, really
fantastic.
He
loves everybody. And he's always got something positive to say when you leave his presence, like, oh man, I got to go practice. Yeah.
Yeah. And he'll tell you the truth too, which is what I love. You know, when I moved to New York, I started studying with this man named Warren Bechet.
Yeah.
He played with Benny Goodman and such. And, you know, up until that point, you know, I'd had a wonderful education and a hand-holding, but I just needed somebody to just tell me straight.
Yeah.
My initials are BS, so I needed somebody to just cut through that, tell me what I need to hear. And I'm still trying. Yeah, I'm still practicing what he told me.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. But how are things as far as employment and making a living in New York?
Yeah, things are really good. So I've had an interesting trajectory over the last several years. I have built up, I play mostly with my own group now, performing arts centers, jazz festivals.
Nice.
I've got my first symphony show coming up, and I've pulled that all together. I've been through major labels. I've been through, this is my recent most self-release to keep control of my music and, you know, putting these bits and pieces together. Definitely think of it as a small business. I have a good team, you know, manager and production manager that I work with regularly to just keep it all going.
Yeah.
And I keep good relationships with my band members. Just try to be fair
important.
And open and honest. I found as the team got bigger, the real fiber of those relationships started to fall apart a little bit. So
sure.
I'm in a really good spot right now. I feel like I do what I want to do. I continue to honor the traditions through, I have a jazz camp for adults in New York called the New York Hot Jazz Camp.
Nice.
That we focus really on the art of ensemble playing, traditional jazz music, pulling in a bunch of great people from the city and people from all over the world come in. Last year we had 50 people from five countries, ages 16 to 85, which I think is really profound.
Wow.
You know, if you can make a multi-generational thing happen.
So how did you assemble your team? Because I know having a jazz camp and a Saturday camp, I can't do it.
It's a lot.
I can't do everything and then have to compose music and then the almighty practicing the trumpet.
Yeah.
So how did you do this?
Well, as far as the camp is concerned, I'm not on the I'm not a faculty member there, which, you know, is hard. I like to play and I go into the jams, but it's mostly producing structure-wise.
Sure.
And I have my co-director, Molly Ryan, is also a vocalist, but she's really good at the administrative type stuff. So
exactly.
We tag team that. She's incredible. We have a great group of volunteers.
Yeah.
And again, just trying to be really fair and transparent with our staff and the campers that come. Every year we say, the best gift you can give us is feedback. What can we be doing better, et cetera?
Is it a nonprofit?
We just are switching right now from LC to nonprofit.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long will that be, you think?
I'm hopefully by the camp by April, which is when our camp is.
Okay, by April.
That'll all be in place.
So say the name of the camp again?
The New York Hot Jazz Camp.
All right. You guys are listening. You got to donate.
I appreciate
it. Let's make it happen.
Because
I think the concept is amazing. I mean, especially the concept of having 16-year-olds with adults. And these are former musicians or those who are still playing?
Exactly. A lot of the maybe older ones are ones that are coming back to it after many years.
Yeah.
And some of the younger ones are just getting into it. Or we want to have people who are kind of ready to make that next jump to either professional or come back and kind of play at a higher level.
Yeah. And I bet the older, the adults have so much advice for the younger students too. You know?
Yeah.
Life advice especially.
Right, yeah. There's really a trust that gets established in those sorts of intensive environments because you spend so much time together and you want to create some place where people are ready to try things and, you know, and fail and such. So we ask questions.
Yeah.
You create relationships that are lifelong.
Yeah. So how many CDs have you recorded under your name?
Since this is my sixth solo effort.
Yeah.
My sixth solo effort. I hope that people can listen to all of them. It's interesting because, you know, when I perform, I play a lot of mixture of the older stuff and there's a lot of trumpet. I think my more recent ones, I've focused on original music, which ends up being a little lyric and singing heavy.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's good for radio too.
No, but that's fine.
They're all ingredients that I enjoy.
And it's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And who you are is an amazing concept because it's not who you are just today, but who you have been, which reflects to who you will become. And, you know, I always say, especially to students too, that jazz never gets old.
Right.
It doesn't go through a cycle or say, oh, that's old music. You know, it's like this is fresh what you did on your first album is relevant today.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, still revisiting some of those songs and maybe pulling them with the experience that I have now. It's very, very interesting.
Exactly.
You know, you continue to build just as much of a body of work and content as you can. Mm-hmm. There's always more to learn.
All right. Yeah. Well, what's on your playlist? What do you listen to?
What am I listening
to? Who do you listen to?
Yeah. What did I go through? I've been on a Clark Terry kick.
Oh, man.
You know, he's so good. I just recently discovered this album that he made with Chico O'Farrell.
Clark Terry with Chico O'Farrell.
Yes. Okay. It's called Spanish Rice. I just discovered this.
I know that.
It's super interesting. Yeah. So I like, we were talking a little bit off mic about how this is kind of like chopped in, it's like cooking, you know, mixing different ingredients together. And when I saw this recently, I've been a Clark Terry fan for a very long time.
Oh, man.
And this just seemed interesting. So you'll hear the O'Farrell burn and band in Latin rhythms, and then Clark will play some sort of bluesy stuff over it, but all of his wonderful licks. Check out the track called Say CC. I am working on this transcription right now, and it is just kicking my butt.
Okay, well, tell you what, we're going to play that right now. This is Clark Terry with Chico O'Farrell, and this is called Say CC. This is The Real Deal with Orbert Davis on 90.9 FM WDCB. And if you can't tell, I'm having a ball with Bria Skomberg. We are talking all things trumpet. I may even get Bria to take out her horn and we can play a little bit. This is called Sitting In. But that was a classic example of what happens when two musicians sit in. That was Clark Terry with Chico O'Farrell, Say CC. Wow. So we were talking about Clark Terry being such an influence on you. And that's the thing about, I think, jazz too, is that no matter in what time space, we can pick anyone and they literally come to life for us through their music.
You know, we talked a little bit about Louis Armstrong, and one of the main things you can hear, obviously, his heart and his playing, his personality. And Clark Terry is one of my top three for that reason, too. Just the humor that you get out of him. I mean, let alone the facility and the technique and all these amazing things.
Yeah.
He's somebody who's been inspiring for all of those things.
Awesome.
And clearly a monster educator that brought in a lot of people. I met him in passing. I didn't have the one-on-ones like many students did. But again, that's why it's beautiful to have these living legends to share his stories too.
Exactly. And Clark represents a whole level of musicians who were jazz artists, but they worked a lot doing other things, you know, as studio musicians, as Clark was with Tonight Show Band from...
From 62 to 72.
No, 61 to 72. Yeah, that's kind of the way I grew up. I wanted to be a studio musician. And I got a chance in Chicago to work with just some amazing musicians, Bobby Lewis, Art Hoyle, yeah. who were legends. But the secret to my success was there was a jazz club around the corner from DePaul, where I went to school. And on Monday nights, all the studio guys, the guys who played shows, went there to just have fun, no money. And my teacher said, that's your new classroom. And before I knew it, less than a year, I was this kid in college playing major recording sessions.
Wow.
Because I was, you know, I was so in awe of them that I wasn't trying to come in and jump in the lead trumpet chair. I'd just give me the lowest part available if I'm here. And I would just try to make those guys sound as best as they could. And next thing you know, I was working like crazy.
Well, that's the kind of stuff that you don't always hear. You can't get out of, you know, school. You know, you show yeah. you can work, you can practice your licks, you can do all these things, but you just got to show up and show your face and, yeah. and hang out and yeah. get to know these players and really listen to what they do. If you want that gig, you study it, you take it seriously,
and that's what
get
you
to
did.
Know the people.
Back to New York and you, that's what you did.
Yeah, you know, I didn't attend a institutionalized music program when I got to New York City. I just mm-hmm. kind of came in and hit wow. the ground running. With yeah. I had some various connections from jazz festivals, you know, meeting sure. people around the world.
Of course.
But I was glad because it was really an opportunity to branch out and try some new things too. Mm-hmm. I had established that I had a large repertoire of classic jazz, but I moved to the city because I wanted to do something else. I didn't want to get pigeonholed just for one thing.
Right.
So
right.
that was a really, really fun first year where people don't know what you quote unquote do.
Yeah.
Like, oh, do you play klezmer music? I'm like, when's the gig? Yes.
Right.
Yes, I do. Oh, do you play this? Do you play this? Sure. Yes. When's the, you know, I'm there to shed and learn it.
Yeah.
But I had a couple of really fortunate things that happened. I was able to play in the Nicholas Payton Television Studio Orchestra, he called it. So right away, I got to meet Frank Green and Freddie Hendrix and Philip Dzek, a wonderful yeah. group of players there. Wycliffe Gordon, I got to play in his big band for a couple things under his
nice,
wings.
Nice.
His speaking of living legends, you know, yeah. under his wings, I met a wonderful group of people that I wouldn't necessarily have crossed paths with if I right. had stuck to that certain yeah. repertoire. So yeah, you never know. You yeah. just kind of show up and have your horn ready. And
wouldn't you say that jazz musicians are just the greatest people in the world? There's
I
something
think so.
About it's just a community of support. You meet someone like we're meeting for the first time, basically,
yeah.
and then but we'll be friends forever.
I hope so.
Yeah,
yeah.
of course. And just wait till after we play together, and it's like,
yeah.
wow. But that's kind of it. I feel that as you know, I'm moving into my senior years. Just you know how I have so many younger students who are looking up to me and they're saying things like, what you did for me? And I'm thinking, what I do? I just played with you.
Yeah.
You know?
I tell students, I'm like, if there's any yeah. information that you think I have, just ask. Like,
exactly.
Let me know. It's a pay
yeah.
it forward
yeah.
thing. And I had some good mentors along the way, people that were generous with that mm-hmm. information. And that's not the case for everybody, but I find that right. the musicians that are the most open and say, look, there's enough for everybody and,
exactly.
You know, have the confidence to
yeah.
to do that are the ones that are happiest and yeah. ultimately keep it going.
And you have to be that way because there is so much space. And even though you know gigs may be few, there's so much that personality in what you do and what another person does that we have to find our space and create that space.
Absolutely. I remember meeting Lou Soloff pretty quickly in the New yeah. York situation. And yeah. he was the first one that said, look, there's always going to be somebody who plays faster, somebody who plays higher. The only chance you have of survival in a place like New York is figuring out what you do, which is unique and special and owning it
yeah.
or who you are, basically. And I sat on that for a couple of days and ultimately realized I'm the only trumpet player in New York from Chilliwack, British Columbia. My hometown, small vibe, is what grounded me in that moment and yeah. said, okay, that's going to keep my spark. I'm going to keep my heart. I remember where I came from. I know the people that are rooting for me back home.
Yeah.
And I'll keep moving forward, work hard, stay humble. And
yeah. What's the population?
Oh, now it's 80,000, you know,
oh, that's
in there.
A big town.
It is pretty big. It's sprawled out. Yeah. I grew up a couple acres next to dairy farms and
okay.
cornfields,
yeah.
so I was on the outskirts of
on
that.
Outskirts, yeah.
I could make some noise, though.
Sure. Well, my town had 2,000 people. So.
Aha! Yeah.
yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It's a really big deal. But
yeah.
you also have your singing voice. That's a part of who you are that mm-hmm. separates you from everyone else. How would you describe, before we listen to something, mm-hmm. your singing voice?
Well, one of my biggest heroes, I like Anita O'Day a lot. I guess more as a stylist.
Mm-hmm.
I took, same with trumpet, I took some singing lessons along the way to learn how to use the instrument and not hurt myself, but
sure.
It's been more about communicating for me with an audience. That's it.
Okay. Well, let's listen to
I think of a song that might be good for
yeah, let's listen to your singing voice.
Well, let's have a listen to this great Cole Porter classic called From This Moment On. I've loved this song since I heard Anita O'Day's version of it. Yeah. It's just so swinging. And this is on my album called Bria that was released on OK Records.
All right, here we go. It's OK. Here's Bria. Okay. Bria Schoenberg with From This Moment on The Real Deal with Orbert Davis, 90.9 FM, WDCB.
From this moment on, you for me, dear. Only 2:40 from this moment on. From this happy day, no more blues songs, only hoopy-doo songs. From this moment on, for you've got the love I need so much. You've got that skin I love to touch. Got the arms to hold me tight. Got the sweet lips to kiss me goodnight. From this moment on, you and I, babe, will be riding high, babe. Every care is gone from this moment on. Thank you.
got the love I need so much. You've got that skin I love to touch. Got the arms to hold me tight. Got the sweet lips to kiss me goodnight. From this moment on, you and I, babe, we'll be riding high, babe. Every care is gone from this moment on.
This is The Real Deal with Orbert Davis on 90.9 FM. WDCB sitting in with Bria Skoenberg, and that was From This Moment On. We get to hear Bria singing. So tell us a bit about your connection and your fascination with Anita O'Day.
Well, I first really discovered Anita while watching that Ken Burns documentary on jazz, where a lot of, you know, people my generation were introduced to a lot of the characters of jazz, and it's Jazz on a Summer's Day at the Newport Festival, and man, she was just so cool and swinging so hard. Her Sweet Georgia Brown is especially great, and she does Tea for Two, and I was so impressed as a horn player, especially as her ability to manipulate a melody over several choruses, not just scatting necessarily. She did a little bit of that, but I found that fascinating, so I dug into her, and she's one of those artists that I've hung out with.
Yeah.
You know, well, if I need to go on a walk for a couple hours, I'll just hang out with her.
Oh, that's good.
I think I love the timbre of her voice. I like her attitude. I never got to meet her, unfortunately, although I understand she's quite a pistol. but I did read her autobiography, and I like that, you know, she totally owns her story. Mm-hmm. You know, she says, yeah, these things happen, and that's just the way it went down, you know? And I try to have that same feeling, you know, going through life. Like, this is my life to this point. I accept it. Yeah. You know, everything that's happened, I'm just going to continue to build on that. I am who I am. The more things change, the more I stay the same, for better or worse.
But I'm finding that through our conversation that the lessons in jazz are more than just about the music. It's really life and pattering ourselves from our heroes. And there's so many things that we can learn from that. But speaking of Ken Burns, I mean, you're so right that, you know, Ken got so much criticism for he should have done it this way, do it this way. But it was such an eye-opener because when you think of curriculum at that time, especially in a general market kind of sense, on public television, what else did we have?
I think it's important to understand that those are introductions to, you're not going to get the whole history of jazz and those things. So, you know, was jazz started in New Orleans? Yeah.
It's okay.
But it's a Southern movement. I mean, it was so much bigger than that. I mean, across all of it, and the, you know, the immigration of people in the different cultures coming together. That's what I find especially interesting is, you know, digging back into it. What are the rhythms that were blending together in the soup pot? Mm-hmm. And then now, how can I kind of isolate those different rhythms and make combinations of them into my own music? I don't know. Just like, what are the ingredients again, and how are different ways that you can stir them up?
All right, because we talked offline while music was playing about our favorite TV show, which is Chopped.
I love Chopped.
I'm telling you.
I love Chopped. It's, I mean, food is my favorite thing. I love music. It's wonderful, boy, do I love food.
Well, food isn't one of my things, but it happens to meet at my waistline if I don't, I'm not careful. But the idea of being able to say, here's the basket. Here's what we have to deal with. And that's jazz.
I believe so. And, you know, my latest recording, I feel like I do that. Or a lot of when I write songs, I have my processes to create space and see what bubbles up and see what comes in. And to me, I hear a lot of different influences in it. And it doesn't reach everybody's ears.
No.
Not necessarily, especially the jazz audience. The jazz, you know, critics don't always, I haven't heard the same things necessarily that I have heard. That so they don't see how it blends together. But that's okay. To me, it just means if I cast that net out of things that I'm really interested in, then more like-minded people will continue to gravitate.
Yeah, and you just have to do what you do, because if you're concerned about that, then you're just trying to please a critic or please someone. And, you know, I believe that Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Freddie Hubbard and everyone else will agree with that's what it's about. It's not about, well, I better play this to make the critics happy, or maybe I shouldn't do this sheets of sound thing, you know?
It may not
catch on.
I do take, you know, I pay attention and I try to listen or read those with a grain of salt, but also, like, if it does bother me, then is there an element of truth that I do need to know? Like, what are things that I need to work on that they're tapping on? You know, these are relationships with people. They're just people in the same world that I'm in.
Exactly.
And so I try to work with them.
Well, cool. I have one other question for you. Okay, now I want you to be the critic of these six CDs by this young trumpet player, vocalist, named Bria Skolnberg. I want you to be the critic of her development.
Well, I have a lot of ideas.
Okay.
You know, so one of the breakthroughs I had, I think, you know, a few albums in, was I started working with this great producer named Matt Pearson. When he met me, I was putting fuzz pedals over Jelly Roll Morton and singing through my trumpet and doing a bunch of stuff, which I, you know, is really interesting and entertaining stuff. But he kind of like said, okay, let's cut away a couple of the things and get to the essence of what it is that your sound is. And so that album, you know, Bria has a lot of really kind of smoky undertones to it. There's a lot of nuance in it. That continued forward. So I think my development is about experimenting, trying things, and then focusing those efforts, focusing those ideas. So if anything, I get criticism because I have a lot of ideas and I just need to be able to blend them together a little bit more. And I do, you know, I think through working with my band more regularly and as I have, and when I perform live, you know, I really shape the sets through a story. So maybe my next album should be a live one.
Think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I that would be really cool.
I think that what has emerged over the course of my albums, or at least I hope, is my own unique voice with these songs. You know, sometimes people say, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to be a monster trumpet player, or do you want to do mashups, or do you want to write songs? I'm like, well, I want to do all of those things. And actually, if I look over the last six albums, that is exactly what I've been doing.
Exactly.
I've been doing all the things that I want to do, at a great level. And I'll continue to do that, just adding a level of experience and maturity that pulls it all together. I've been doing more original music because I think that's a really interesting process for getting to know yourself and what your voice is.
Exactly. And recording jazz is just a snapshot or documentation in time.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes we spend, and I'm guilty of this, spend so much time planning the perfect album or the perfect experience, and then, you know, it's really a moment in time, and then we have to just go on. So I like the fact that you're recording, and because that's so important, and I'm taking a lesson from you to get back in the studio soon.
I know.
Or on the stage and record the live concert.
I do think that I continue to take risks. I'll say that.
That's what it's about.
And I could... You know, when I lived in British Columbia, again, I did a lot of recreation. I did a lot of classic jazz in a lot of ways. And that's just not what I'm necessarily here to do at this moment. Or at least if I'm going to be paying for it, I may as well put some new original ideas out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe a live album would be the next step for me.
So all right. We heard it right here on The Real Deal. Let's hold Bria to that. So Bria, we have one more thing to do. And this is my trumpet selfishness coming out. I would love to play with you right now.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.
Yeah.
And we'll reset the microphones. Wow. Now, that was fun, Bria.
Yeah, thank you.
I think there's no other way of really getting to know somebody than to just play jazz. And,
absolutely.
There's just, you know, listening to you, just having that conversation. So, wow.
Well, you are clearly an accomplished conversationalist and in radio, and that comes out in your music. So
thank you so much. This has been so much fun. And ladies and gentlemen, I hope you agree. Thank you so much, Bria, for hanging out with me on The Real Deal. And we will do it again.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you all for listening.
Well, we have time for one more. Here's Bria Skonberg from her CD with a twist. Here's Whatever Lola Wants.
I always get what I aim for, and your heart and soul is what I came for. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. Take off your coat, don't you know you no exception to the rule. I'm irresistible, you fool. Give in. I always get what I aim for, and your heart and soul is what I came for. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. Take off your coat, don't you know you exception to the rule. I'm irresistible, you fool. Give in. Give in. Give in.
my special guest, Bria Skolmberg, sitting in with me here on The Real Deal with Orbert Davis. Hey, stay tuned for our third hour. I decided to dedicate the whole hour to trumpeters and vocalists. So it's going to be fun in honor of Bria Skolmberg. So don't go too far. I'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, this is trumpeter Bria Skolmberg, and I want to let you know I'll be playing at Space in Evanston on Friday, April 10th. I hope you can join me there and enjoy some more good music like you are here on WDCB.